Yle Podcast.
Hello and welcome to All Points North, the Yle News podcast that aims to add a bit of climate awareness to your weekend activities. This week we'll discuss Finland's reaction to yet another report calling for urgent action on climate change and possible measures for meeting the country's climate targets. Two guests join us today. Outi Hanperä, a lead climate solutions specialist with the government innovation agency Sitra, and Hanna Aho, a climate justice expert from KEPA, and that's the umbrella organization for development assistance NGOs in Finland.
This is the All Points North podcast, telling you everything you need to know about Finland this week.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome. It's Friday and time for yet another episode of your favorite English language podcast, All Points North. It feels like we were here just yesterday, especially since my colleague Mark Odom is sitting across from me in his usual spot. Good to have you, Mark.
Thanks, Denise. I actually haven't left this spot since last week. That's how much I love being here.
I can believe it. Now, joining us this week is Outi Hanperä. As I said, she's one of the lead climate solutions specialists with the Finnish Innovation Fund, also known as Sitra. Thanks for coming, Outi.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Great. And joining us in studio today is Hanna Aho. She's a climate justice expert with the global development NGO platform KEPA. Thanks for coming, Hanna.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Excellent. Now, just so our listeners and so that we as well can understand where our guests are coming from, could you explain a little bit about your role as a lead climate solutions specialist, Outi?
Yes. So climate solution team Sitra is a new team formed just we started at the beginning of May this year. And the aim is to provide more information and solutions to increase the ambition of the Finnish climate policy.
So you're directly advising government, are you?
We are providing information and proposing solutions, yes, for the government. And we are then like after, you know, for example, after we publish a report or recommendation, we really hope to have a profound dialogue with the stakeholders to discuss what this means and how this could be taken forward.
Okay, so you talked about having dialogue with stakeholders, which means that you're probably speaking with people like Hanna. And it's a good point at which to bring you in, Hanna. What exactly does a climate justice expert do?
Well, I'm an advocate for climate justice. So day-to-day life, I write blogs and talk to policymakers and try to tell them that, you know, climate change is really important. You should really do something that is actually would work and would help. But also my role is to tell about the lives of people in developing countries and how climate change is impacting them and how this problem is also a question of justice and decent lives.
Mm. Okay. So we're all a bit wiser, and I'd like to ask you both to quite quickly strip down this fresh report that was issued by the UN's climate agency, the IPCC, earlier this week, what you make of it. We know that the paper is calling for countries to slow global temperature rises by 1.5 degrees, down from, I think, what they say is currently in reality, a 3 to 4 degree increase. Is there anything else that's striking about that report? Let's start with you, Outi.
Yes, I think the key points are the kind of the difference between the 1.5 degrees and the 2 degrees world. I think even, you know, the climate community who are very aware and deep in these kind of reports and scenarios, we're quite shocked about the difference and the urgency now to act and do something about it. And also the kind of we have to stop the kind of the thinking that we can kind of pick and choose the target that we are aiming at. We kind of release the emissions and then like accordingly we can choose the target. That's not the case. After the 1.5 degrees, the world becomes quite uncertain and wild, and we don't know how then the kind of the mechanisms will work. So after that, the risks are huge, and we necessarily cannot choose anymore where we will end up.
Thanks for that, Outi. And of course, when you mentioned 2 degrees, you're referring to the two degree increase that was originally agreed in the Paris Climate Accord of a few years ago.
even, you know, it wasn't 2 degrees. It was we should aim well below 2 degrees and aim for 1.5 degrees. But I think there might have been a bit of kind of misunderstanding, and people might have thought that actually 2 degrees is still quite okay. And now there is definitely new information that it's not, and we should be much more ambitious and aim for max 1.5 degrees.
Okay, I know Mark has some questions up his sleeve, but very quickly, let's go to Hannah to find out. Hannah, what's your takeaway from this latest report?
Well, I think the main thing is that we know that 2 degrees is not the safe limit, as Oudia as well said. But the impacts are also pretty striking when you look at 2 degrees or 1.5 degrees. And for example, to the biodiversity of the world or the poorest people in the world. Actually, when we talk about 1.5 degrees, we should remember that already at that limit, we will lose most of the coral reefs of the world, for example, which is really devastating for many people whose livelihoods depend on fisheries. Mm. Actually, hundreds of million people do, especially in Asia. And then again, heat waves will become very extreme already then. So we also talk about hundreds of million people who will have to suffer those kind of heat waves. So in that sense, we have to also remember that even if we are successful, which I hope we will be, in limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees, it will be very important to make sure that we can adapt to already those dramatic changes.
So the question is, because I think people may have this misconception that if we limit it to 1.5 degrees, everything's going to be okay. So you're saying there's still going to be dramatic changes in our environment and the way we live, probably.
Yes, exactly. And it will also happen here in Finland. So we will not be immune to the changes. And of course, this summer has already shown that already at 1 degree warming globally,
which is 2 degrees in Finland, we are kind of, you know, it's double here in the north.
Yeah, exactly. But already at that stage, we do see big changes in our environment, and especially when we how we produce food, for example.
Okay.
So after the report was released, we saw a flurry of reaction with experts like Markku Ollikainen, the head of Finland's climate panel, saying the country would have to slash fossil fuel emissions by 100% or even 150% to meet the target. It sounds a little alarming to the average person. Obviously, you think there's a concern. What are the impacts that these kinds of that global warming will have, even if it's minimized?
So I think it's important for people to understand that we still have a chance. So there is a message of hope, but we just need to act very, very quickly. And globally, we need to be able to halve all our emissions in just about 10 years. So it is very quick. But then again, the benefits will be huge. It will mean a safer world for us all. In Finland, it is true, we both need to cut fossil fuel emissions and at the same time make sure that the land that actually absorbs carbon, so our forests, our freshwaters, that they are protected and they are taken care of in a sustainable way, to make sure that we can actually reach these targets. But it will change our world, our everyday lives. And I know that it might seem worrying to many people, but I think there should... I hope that there's also some kind of a reassurance in people's mind that if we do this together, then this can also benefit us in many ways.
Well, there's a lot more that we'd like to talk about,
so
but so much more that we might have to reserve an hour for this. But let's just jump over some of the issues that we wanted to address. Maybe we'll be able to come back to them a bit later on and talk with Outi a bit about some of the recommendations of initial recommendations that Citra is looking to propose. And you'll have final recommendations sometime early next year.
Yeah. So, of course, this is a... There is not only one recommendation. This is a massive challenge. And of course, there isn't just a single solution that we should look at. And overall, Citra is, for example, recommending a sustainable development budget planning, which means like a tax reform. So we should really shift our taxation on those things that we dislike, such as pollution, over use of natural resources, production of waste, and shift the taxation to those, and then tax less on things that we like, which is labour. And for example, we can also reduce tax for businesses, business tax. So it's really kind of like using all means to and all forces to drive the change. And one key player in this field is the government budget,
yeah,
and how we allocate funding and how we collect taxes.
Now, if we sort of break that down, yep, to a more granular level and maybe to a level that people like Mark and I can understand, when you talk about shifting taxes to areas that we don't like, which is, yep, like fossil fuels, if you indirect speak, are you talking about taxation on fuel, for example, fossil fuels?
It's a package, yes. So in reality, we would like to promote or enable a more kind of faster and drastic change towards a clean, low-carbon world, and also to promote circular economy. And so in reality, it is either, yes, introducing new or increasing existing taxes on pollution, waste, and then, but it's a package. People always get very scared when they hear about, oh, new taxes, you know, increasing prices. But at the same time, you do this in a budget neutral way. You reduce taxation on labor to promote employment, and also you can use taxes, for example, on business to maintain competitiveness of the Finnish economy.
Real quick, I want to ask about forestry. It's a big business here in Finland. There's a lot of trees here, and it's green gold, I mean, financially, but it's also a major carbon sink, and they absorb lots of CO2 from the atmosphere. And this week we reported about a report from in the Environmental Institute saying that if Finland stopped logging, Finland wouldn't just be carbon neutral, it would become carbon positive. Mm. Wouldn't that be easier than taxing everybody?
As I said, it doesn't eliminate that. We're not saying that shouldn't, you know, happen. At the same time, we should protect our...
Is that part of the proposal? Or
we haven't yet, like, this particular piece of work that we will be working at and publishing probably, hopefully, kind of towards the start of the new year. This will look at the budget reform. Mm-hmm. And then we will look at many other, you know, the team is providing many other solutions to kind of at the end to have a more clear vision where we should aim at.
But sorry, I see that Hannah is bursting to say something about this, so please go ahead,
yes,
Hannah.
Thank you. I think there's a misconception often that if you do this thing, then you don't have to, yeah, do the other. The reality is we need to do both. So with the taxations change and with on top of cutting fossil fuel use, well, going zero there eventually, we do need the forest. So that is the reality.
You do need the forest as an industry, you mean?
We need forest standing. We need forest growing. We cannot increase logging into a level where our carbon sinks would be decreasing. That is the fact.
Let's move the conversation closer to the man and woman in the street. Ultimately, climate policies affect people like you and me, sometimes unevenly, as Hannah knows. And I know that these are the kinds of issues that you work with in particular. Do you see any new changes in climate policy significantly impacting the lives of people here in Finland?
I think the big changes that we talk about are, of course, in our daily lives, in the way we live, in how big houses, how we heat them. Those are big decisions. What kind of food you eat, going towards more vegetable-based diet would be very, very helpful as well. And then, of course, Do you take the train or the metro, or do you need to take the car, or can you, for example, share it? So, of course, those are big changes, and cultural things, they can be difficult. But then again, a new mindset will help there.
And also here, as you said, that they're not like, we should do one thing and then all the other. Here, like, you know, there's a lot of responsibility on our kind of choices, but then the government can help us to make these right choices by, for example, taxation and the kind of relative price differences. So it's easier to choose a better or cleaner alternative.
Sort of prodding people in the right direction.
I got the feeling that Finland could maybe make some improvements, although I sort my trash or my recyclables, except for the plastic. That hasn't come to my neighborhood yet. But in some cases, people have to sort their waste and then drive to a central point where they have to dispose of it, you know, ecologically. And it's a bit contradictory when you're taking the car out to take the recycling. But also, there's no penalty for not recycling. Are there any measures that Finland's looking at to address more recycling?
In general level, the discussion about waste taxes, but that wouldn't kind of necessarily punish the ordinary people or the ordinary man.
But would taxes reduce carbon limits, the level of carbon in the atmosphere?
In general,
I mean, how do we get people to recycle more? How do we get the country to recycle more?
It's a big kind of behavioral change issue. There could be some kind of incentives, but also, I think there is kind of also we need a change in the way we think about like this kind of, you know, the kind of more linear economy thinking. Like I buy something, I use it, and then I dispose it. Whereas if we provide more means to promote the kind of more circular economy kind of thinking, then you don't only just think about, oh, this is now waste and I recycle it, but it will become someone else's resource. And, you know, if the incentives are in place, I do think that, you know, if there are incentives for incentives, for example, that someone could actually use that resource.
And Hanna, you know a little bit about the outside world. Have you seen any measures taken where countries done really well with recycling?
Well, recycling is not my real forte, but I would I think it's really important to remember that from little flows there is a bigger piece, and recycling is one of them. We are not that bad at recycling in Finland altogether, but we still have way to go. And one problem is that we've started to, for example, burn quite a lot of our waste, and that is of course then in the atmosphere. So I think the future will be actually mining from kind of fields where there's rubbish. So to say that becomes the gold of the future, that you can actually do things out of the stuff that we used to call rubbish.
One day you're going to get some guy goes, hey, there's a big trash dump in my backyard. We're rich.
Well, actually, you know, things like gold or other valuable metals, that is where you get them from.
Right.
And that is much more ecological than opening a mining pit somewhere and polluting waterways. So that is just a new way of thinking, I think.
I feel like that kind of industry is actually well developed in certain parts of the global south, if we call it that.
Yeah.
But they conjure up really disturbing pictures of kids sort of clawing through mountains of garbage to get the sort of materials that you would use in your fancy new smartphone, for example. So there needs to be, I guess, a sort of an ethical approach to that.
Exactly.
Now, one of the issues that consumers...
Want to add that it's not only about recycling. We need like a more with a bigger change, for example, in the legislation to enable us to use recycled material. Sometimes the legislation such as health and safety measures, they prevent us from using recycled materials.
And can I just add that we also need to think, how much do we actually consume? It's not that we recycle things that everything will be fine. We just need to lower the amount of stuff that we use in our everyday lives.
Indeed. So. I was going to come to the issues, to the issue of what consumers have to deal with if we're talking about everyday Jane, the everyday Jane and Joe. And one of the issues I know, certainly in my personal life, I feel like I'm a bit frustrated with is the kind of waste that I'd rather not have. So, for example, retailers pushing a lot of plastic at me in terms of, you know, lots of foodstuffs and different kinds of plastic packaging and so on. What about incentives on that or measures on that end to maybe reduce that kind of the amount of material that's being used to present things that consumers have to buy, have to get food?
There could be, again, different kind of tax measures on packaging that would hopefully provide incentives for those, for retailers, for example, to think how they package. We all know that if you order something online and it's just so frustrating how many plastic wraps you need to open before you, you get to the...
Or just, I mean, ordinary items in the store. That, I mean, I think they're adult-proof. Yeah. I can't get them open because there's so much plastic, so much hard plastic, and it's so...
So I'm sure, again, like, you know, with the right incentives, we can have ways to guide the way we package our goods.
So how can Finland modify, or not Finland, but how do you encourage people to produce, reuse, recycle?
Well, awareness raising is really important, I think. But I would also be very careful in saying, you know, people acting for the climate should just concentrate on how they consume. What they actually should be doing is being active in the way that we actually decide on things in the society, so politically active in one way or another. At the moment, we have the problem that our policymakers, as you actually referred, are saying that climate change is a very serious matter, but then again, at the same time, for example, our government is not really thinking about raising the ambition bar at all. And this is where we need people. We need people actively saying we need a safer world. And that this is a political push that needs to happen. So you can act for climate change in very many different ways. And we are all, you know, we have different roles in our lives. We are fathers, we are children, we are someone's cousin and someone's friend. And
I feel, though, that there's been so much talk about the need for climate change over the past maybe 5 years that people may have sort of stopped listening, and there is no urgency on the part of ordinary people to sort of change their habits or do things differently or even really engage in the kind of activism that you're talking about, pushing our politicians and pushing our parliamentary representatives and so on to take action and get things done. What can be done about that issue?
Well, I think us here talking about the situation is, of course, a very important thing. I think there's quite a lot of movement at the moment. Like last summer kind of got people alert again. If we have a winter when there's no snow, that usually brings people get really worried about that as well. So I think kind of offering clear ways how to do things better helps quite a lot, you know. So you can do the recycling, you can stop flying, for example, and just, you know, when you plan your next holiday, think about what kind of impacts that has. So
But that hasn't happened, and I don't see it happening. So
you don't think so? I know many people who already consider these things, but of course we all live in our own bubbles.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, yes,
make your bubble bigger.
Sure, you know a few people who don't do it, or you know, who are very very diligent in being ecological. But for the most part, there's probably more cars on the road now than ever. There's more airplanes in the sky, more fuel, et cetera. How come? Is it like a frog in a boiling pot that's slowly getting hotter and hotter and no one's noticing? Everyone's, well, that's we'll get out of the water when it gets too hot. and then it'll be too late.
That's why, you know, we have a government who needs to really push for policies that will, you know, take us to the kind of to the end goal. And although we all need to play a part, that won't take us there. We need, you know, government to.
Has the Finnish government taken its own measures in transportation when they go to meetings? Do they take public transport, or do they all, you know, do they try to reduce?
Some MPs use a lot of taxis.
I've heard that.
Well, now the president has declared that his office will take this into consideration even more than before, and that they will
reduce their carbon footprint by 2/3, I believe.
Yeah, I think so too. So that's just giving just an example to other people. But of course, the government's role, primary role, is to make it easy for ordinary people to do the good decisions, the right decisions for our climate, but also for our environment as a whole.
So we got government, we got the public. What about industry? How do you whip them into shape?
The emission trading scheme. That's the main existing, you know, measure that is, it's there, and we should make all, like, provide all possible measures to make sure that the ETS, the emission European Emission Trading Scheme, is working as efficiently as possible and makes it stringent to make sure that, you know, that will force the industrial sector to reduce emissions.
Well, our podcast is all about our listeners, so it's only right that we bring their voices into the show. This week, our reporting on some of the proposals in that CITRA paper we talked about earlier generated a lot of social media buzz. For example, Penny commented that a proposed fuel tax hike would unfairly punish people who don't live within easy reach of their jobs or even basic services and who don't have access to reliable public transportation. She said, many people outside Helsinki don't have an alternative. How would you respond to Penny's concern, either of you?
It's a just concern, but I would like to remind that this, we are talking about a package. It's easy to point the tax increases and the kind of the implication that would have on ordinary people, but at the same time mentioned about reducing the labor taxes, and that should kind of help on the payday. You will see it on your payday. And in addition, this kind of package could include lump sum transfer for the more disadvantaged poor people, or in the lower income decile, to make sure that if we shift from labor taxation towards kind of taxing more natural resources and pollution, that could kind of risk the progressive nature of our taxation. So we need to make sure that that doesn't happen, and we can, for example, use these lump sum transfers. And there is an international experience that, you know, this kind of measures have been put in place.
Okay. Now, like you said, people have a tendency to fixate on the things that they find frightening and they think of as very negative. So there was more commenting on this proposed fuel tax hike. And Amanda came at it from another angle. She said that increasing fuel taxes could have a knock-on effect on the prices of many products unless the transportation of goods is exempt from these taxes. Will your study factor in that particular dimension?
It's a relevant question. There might be some knock-on effects, and I hope, I cannot say that we will be able to, but I hope we are able to then kind of model more kind of the direct and indirect impacts of this proposition and see what kind of then safety measures should be in place to kind of, for example, to prevent overall kind of massive price increases. But at the same time, we are talking about kind of fuel increases in today's world, but we don't want to live in this world for the rest of our lives. The aim is to really radically reduce the emissions from the transport sector, and then we need to take a step forward, and we are talking about electrification of our transport system. And then hopefully then kind of fuel increases would play much smaller role. I'm sure there will be a transition period before we are there, but we will get there.
Let's hope.
And Din asked on Facebook about the potential impact these measures might have on small and medium enterprises, not just big industry. Hmm. Any thoughts on that?
So imagine a small company that's relying on transportation, for example. Maybe they're delivering things, or maybe they're getting some of their inputs and they're having to pay higher fuel taxes and it's eating into their profits. They're a small business. It's something that could make a difference.
It's a good point. And maybe at the same time, if we're thinking about the kind of poor households, we could also look at the kind of smaller businesses and their how they are impacted. I know that, for example, in many UK cities, they're considering putting rush hour charges on to enter the city centre on rush hour at times. And
Stockholm has that, correct?
I'm not sure.
London does anyway.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. And there was a lot of discussion how this would impact the smaller businesses and should they be exempt or... So you can always fine-tune. This is just like an overall proposal, but you have to... It's a good point, and of course you have to think through the impacts carefully and make sure that this wouldn't kind of kill any business as such. But at the same time, also hopefully in the near somewhere in the near future, also the logistics and the HGVs would also be not just kind of diesel based trucks, but we can then use gas or electrification
HGVs,
also there.
Yeah, meaning heavy goods vehicles.
Exactly. Right.
Very good. I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't Tesla, there's some innovators testing electric trucks.
Well, yeah, there is like...
Volvo just did one.
Exactly. So there are definitely, there's always
there
something new coming.
Yeah,
so we shouldn't just think that this, you know, about kind of situation at the moment, but really look at also where we are aiming at.
Now, you made a point there about thinking about impacts. Hannah is bursting. Talking about impacts, and I think that brings us to the next point. I'll just talk a little bit first about some of the comments that some of our other Facebook audience members offered up on our page. For example, Stephen called for investments in the grid, meaning, I guess, the electric charging grid, and reducing taxes on smaller electric cars. And Huck proposed tax refunds for people who engage in car sharing, use biogas, or even just use their bikes. And I'm missing a page there. But anyway, the bottom line is that it seems to me that one of the things that policymakers have to do is to consider all the interdependencies in an economy, in a nation, in a society, so that if you, for example, you press one lever here, something happens over here, and you need to be able to factor all of that in. How good of a job are we doing on that?
I think Finland, in general, we could do much better in evaluating. For example, if we put a policy measure in place, it would be quite useful to evaluate the impacts later and see if that policy measure achieved the targets that it was aiming at, and if so, what was the key implications, how those impacts were achieved, or at the same time, if we didn't achieve those targets, why? And we are not in very good in kind of systematically evaluating what we're doing.
That speaks to some extent to what you do, although you don't do it so much here in Finland, but in terms of looking at the impact of different kinds of policies on different groups.
Well, yes and no. I think what I take from this conversation as well is that we should be able to look a little bit further in the way that what kind of society and economy do we actually have? What kind of economic activity do we want? What kind of new businesses do we want? And the truth is that there are fields that are so to say dying, that it's difficult to see a future for them. But and that, of course, brings concerns for many people. And that's why often we talk about just transition. So that when there are this big changes in the society, we need to make sure that we do shift from something that is disturbing our planet very fundamentally to something that is more sustainable, but at the same time take care of the people and make sure that there is a transition where you can learn a new job, get a new job, and where new businesses can arise in fields where we do need products or services and so forth. But at the same time, make sure that our footprint on the planet gets way, way smaller.
One of those potential new industries that was talked about a lot in the last few years was clean tech. And I think it's one of Finland's calling cards in terms of the wider world, that Finland is doing extremely well in terms of the clean tech sector. What's happening there? It's been very quiet lately. Have we actually been making ground in terms of covering ground, or has Finland actually been covering ground in terms of building up these new possible business sectors that at the same time will reduce emissions, help the country meet its climate targets, create new jobs in new sectors?
And be profitable.
Yeah, don't forget the bottom line.
It's quite difficult to kind of measure the change, and that's also something that we hope to kind of look more in detail, the kind of the potential of the opportunities in the clean tech or more broadly for the Finnish economy. We have expertise, I know, for example, in the charging for electric vehicles and in many other sectors and technologies, but it is a fast-moving train already. And if we think about what is happening in China, how massively they are now producing electric vehicles or wind turbines, solar, it just, the scale is quite unbelievable. So we really, if we want to kind of take part of that cake, if I would say, and in a way, one of the hopes of the IPCC report is that, of course, there is still time to reach the 1.5 degrees, but it's also like the investments that are needed. Of course, you know, we have to, you know, find the money and the investments, but then, you know, some sectors will benefit from those investments, and we of course want to be part of that. So it requires quite, I think, a bit more work here internally to make sure that our companies are in you know, fit to
compete.
Yeah.
Real quick, I found your missing page. Thank Denise. and I would be amiss, I guess Isa, our friend on Facebook, would be upset to learn that we would have forgotten his question about electric cars. He would like to see a more extensive charging grid because there's no place to charge them, really. And I guess other questions like, why doesn't Finland make it perhaps even more affordable to buy an electric car versus a petroleum-fueled one?
And I think Isa also talked about the fact that he would like to be able to charge his car in his apartment block while he's at home. There's no such facility. He would like to be able to charge a car while he's at work. There's no such facility.
I think that's clearly a problem, and that should be tackled. That's as simple as that. I mean, it's a good observation, and that has been discussed already. And, you know, government.
And we should put pressure and hope that all of us would put pressure in our workplaces, in our kind of apartment blocks, to kind of make sure that those charging places are in place. But I would also, my understanding is that our grid is still in relatively kind of good shape, considering the really low share of the electric cars. So if you take into account the kind of the amount of electric cars we have at the moment.
Isn't it a chicken and egg situation, though? If the grid were bigger, people would buy more electric cars. But
regarding electric cars, I believe that the issue is still the price. Mm. It's still, you know, you have to come to parity with the internal combustion engine. You know, when people see that the total cost, when you include the kind of the capital cost and operational cost, when they come to parity, I believe that people will, you know, go and buy them. So there is, and I think with taxation again, we can reduce the gap much faster.
Okay, now we've got to move on. But before we move on, you know, we'll be essentially wrapping up the show. I would like each of you to sort of, you know, leave a parting message on this really, really weighty issue that, you know, it really is in danger of blowing over in a sense. You know, so you, sometimes you get a lot of hype around a particular subject. People get, you know, all breathless about it, but then they start thinking about other things. So if there's one important, weighty message that you'd like to leave with people, what would it be? You go first, Hannah.
Well, I think now is a good moment to get active on this issue, because we have parliament elections coming up and also the Euro elections coming up. So, you know, be active, talk to your peers, your friends, your colleagues about the issue, be active also politically and ask for politicians to act on this. So we'll have a great chance in 1 week, the 20th on Saturday, there will be a climate march in Helsinki, and we will have all of our leading politicians there telling what they are going to do about the situation. So come and join us there. And at the same time, you know, if you own forest, keep it standing, take care, good care of it. If you know you're thinking about buying a car, well, consider what kind of, and if you actually do need it or could share it, you know, do little things and do small things at the same time.
Okay, what about you, Odie?
I think it's a message about hope. We still have hope. We just have to make sure that the drastic changes that we'll need will happen. We need, of course, individuals. I think we all know what we need to do. So everyone should kind of do a little bit more, start kind of, you know, even small changes will matter. But then again, it's the pressure. Put the pressure on your local, on your MPs, on your local, towards your local council, yes. European, you know, members, your MEPs, and also, you know, the media. We have to make sure that this discussion will not die after this week. It will keep on going. I think media plays a huge role.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot of pressure on us as it is, but we'll bear that in mind.
If you have something on your mind, send your comment or question to Yle News' Facebook or Twitter accounts, or email us at yle.news@yle.fi. You can also send us an audio or text message on WhatsApp. Our number is +358 44 421 0909. We'd like to hear what's on your mind.
Now it's time for us to take a look at some of the other stories that we covered this week, and we'll keep it short by just reviewing the news items that our audience engaged with most.
First up, a photo of a rare white furred bear cub taken by an aspiring young nature photographer gained widespread attention after being reprinted in several newspapers and shared like heck on social media. Upper secondary school graduate from the eastern city of Kuopio, Niilo Isotalo, snapped the photo at a nature reserve in Kuhmo, a region near the Russian border.
Lovely. And taxpayers can look forward to completely different tax cards next year as the tax administration Vero moves to streamline income tax reporting. In future, tax card will specify a set earnings limit for a full year rather than a monthly cap. Vero will also do away with a separate tax card for supplementary income and will apply a single tax rate to all your annual earnings.
And finally, pupils in Finnish schools may get a free snack in addition to the hot lunches currently provided by municipalities. Agriculture and Forestry Minister Jari Leppä said he'd asked a team to look into the idea as a part of a push to improve school meals. The minister said that he was concerned by recent reports that up to 60% of students miss their school lunches. Hungry kids.
Yeah. And, you know, people said there was no such thing as a free lunch. They're getting a free lunch, but they're skipping it. Anyway, remember, you can find out more about what's in the news and maybe take a peek at that white bear cub on our website at yle.fi/news, or you can check him out on our Instagram page. Well, it feels like we only just started the show, but it's already time to wrap up. We can't say goodbye without talking about our weekend plans, though. For me, I can say that I'll be getting ready for my summer vacation, finally. Woohoo!
And what a time of year it is to have.
What about you, Odie?
I hope to enjoy the beautiful weather with my children and also play some football, my new activity.
Fantastic.
Women's team.
Oh, congratulations. You go. What about Hannah? What are you looking forward to this weekend?
Well, I still have a little bit of a cold, so I hope I will get rid of that. And otherwise, I will do some yoga and go hopefully for a walk in a forest.
In the forest, of course. Yes. And what about Mark?
Well, I just might leave the studio this weekend and head out to the Superwood Festival by Ivana Helsinki. From Friday to Sunday, organizers promise 45 hours of music, art, and food. It's all taking place under one roof at Eastern Helsinki's Hotel Rantapuisto, and it features performances by indie, rock, electro, and pop artists.
Wow.
So that's where I'm going.
You're totally hip, Mark.
I'm so hip.
Sounds like an incomparable weekend for you, as usual. And on that note, I'd like to thank you all, especially our guests, Outi Haranpää and Hanna Aho. Thanks for coming in, ladies. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
Just a reminder now that autumn vacation time is upon us all, and we at All Points North will also be taking a break. But we'll be back in November. We can't leave without thanking our audience. Remember to keep in touch with us via our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts, and of course at wiley.fi/news. This week's All Points North program was produced by Zina Iovino, and our audio engineer was Jonathan Kottila. Thanks for joining us, and remember to tune in again in November. Have a great weekend and have a great autumn.
You've been listening to All Points North, a podcast produced by Yle News, a unit of the Finnish Broadcasting Company. For daily news from Finland in English, head to yle.fi/news and follow us online at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You've been listening to Yle News.